downloaded the tape. This is the 19th of April, 1998. 4 years after Waco and three years after Oklahoma City. I'll start off by reading a little recap of our most recent court appearance in Nevada at Minden. This was in the gold coins trial, and I think it's self-explanatory enough so that I can just read it. Sometime back, we had to accept the idea that if we didn't somehow get the gold away from Judge Gamble and out of Nevada, we were stuck forever in litigation. Gamble had ruled that the gold go back to Overton. Green, Horton, and Abbott appealed. Nevada Supreme Court denied and sent the remittiture, the file, the case, back to Gamble. The Green gang appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which denied and sent it back. Gamble could and should have released the gold at that time, but Overton died February the 10th, 1996, giving the Green gang another excuse to ask for holding the gold in Nevada pending their claims. They wanted Gamble to open ancillary probate for the Overton property in Nevada. Gamble stalled until the Texas probate was practically over and then appointed a special administrator in Nevada to do an ancillary probate. The special administrator was a fairly sharp attorney who looked at the paperwork and saw that Overton had given the gold by a special assignment to Phoenix in May of 1995, some 9 months before Overton's death and long before he entered the rest home where he died. So he asked for a hearing before the judge, Gamble, for instructions as to what the judge wanted him to do, since he could see a conflict coming with the Texas court, which had in the interim ruled that it wanted the gold sent to Texas where it could later decide the validity of the Phoenix assignment. When his paperwork came in, that is, the special administrator came in asking the judge for instructions, we debated asking for a recusal of Judge Gamble based upon his prejudice against Phoenix and Eckers, but decided it would just cause more delay. Then Horton filed his comments, among which was the statement that he thought Gamble should recuse, take himself off the case himself, since he was prejudiced against Green and had even called Green a swindler. That meant Horton couldn't oppose our motion to recuse, so we went for it. And last Saturday, April 11th, we got notice of his order, Gamble's order, recusing himself and appointing the other judge in his court, Gibbons. Gibbons could have and wanted to put off the hearing, but he really couldn't pretend not to know the case because all of the Abbott filings seeking receivership had been done in his court. At that time, however, he was newly appointed to the bench and facing an election pretty soon, and Abbott had him a little buffaloed. He finally got rid of that case by granting us a change of venue to Clark County, Las Vegas, which the Green gang appealed to the Nevada Supreme Court, and it's still there. The special administrator had asked for the hearing, and even though an attorney himself, had brought another attorney with him to represent him. Seems Gibbons has some respect for this attorney, so he asked him for his comments. He said, in reviewing the file, it appeared that the assignment to Phoenix was not objected to by the Texas executor, and he could see no way the Nevada court could hold the coins, since all of the claims he knew of were against Phoenix, not against Overton. And the way the Texas court order read, to send the coins back to Texas, it looked like it could get really complicated between Texas and Nevada if one probate disagreed with the other. The safest thing to do would be to send them back to Texas. Of course, that brought Horton to his feet to contend that those poor people in Nevada, the ones to whom Phoenix owed millions of dollars that had been trying all this time to get Phoenix into receivership, would never get their money. It is a comedy if it weren't so damned expensive. Gibbons asked Horton if he had filed a claim in Texas against the Overton estate. Well, no, he hadn't been informed of Overton's death in time to file a claim. Gibbons came back to that later and asked Horton if it was too late to file a claim in Texas when he learned of Overton's death, and Horton repeated that it was. Back here in the files, we have found a court filing made at Gibbons' court in the receiver case, wherein In May of 96, some three months after Overton's death, Horton made reference to the fact that the assignment of the coins to Phoenix was made on Overton's deathbed. That lie will now catch up with him. If I get into Abbott's antics, this will be longer than the Commander Hatton writing, but I better mention a few things. This hearing is called after lunch, 1:30 p.m., so Abbott is feeling no pain. He isn't sloshed, but he's plenty loud and flushed. When he gets in 10 minutes late, but the judge hasn't come in yet, he rushes over to Brad Ellie, our attorney, and says, "I am now serving you with this motion." Brad takes it and looks at it and smirks and shows it to Doris. She doesn't have her glasses on, and I'm too far away to see it, and in comes the judge and calls our case first. He plans to continue it, so it'll only take a minute. Brad and I move up to the little table marked defendants, where there are two chairs, and the other four, Abbott Horton, the special administrator, and his attorney, Haas, fetch up two chairs from somewhere and sit at the other little table marked plaintiff. When all these folks get settled, and here's Doris behind Brad and I, just outside the bar, we could see Gibbons resign himself to being late to start that next act, which was billed as a criminal trial. Nearly an hour later, Gibbons asks Brad if he has anything more so that we can wrap this up for the day. Brad says, "I surely do. As we came in here, Mr. Abbott served me with a pleading asking you to appoint a probate panel under Section 136 that would be headed by the very embezzler of the gold coins in the first place. This pleading is filled with complete fabrication, and I find it incredulous that Mr. Abbott would insult the court and ourselves with such a frivolous filing." Abbott jumps to his feet to interrupt, snorting and blowing and about to explode, and Horton gets him by the hand and shushes him. So Gibbons sums it up by saying that he is leaning toward sending the gold coins to Texas, but that he will give Abbott and Horton 10 days to submit briefs of their positions so that everyone has a chance to locate any law that hasn't been brought out. This is, of course, to make it a lot more difficult for them to appeal his decision should he decide to send the coins to Texas. So we think it went pretty well. We have 10 days to show up their lies, and with the judge having said he leans toward what we want, we have some hope of getting the gold moved. We think if it gets physically moved out of Nevada, those old barristers will give up and not trot down to Texas chasing it. To appeal this decision, they have to post a bond, maybe equal to the value of the gold, which is unlikely, so we feel that the vice is tightening a bit in our favor. I realize this is out of order and disjointed, but it may be better than nothing, and I don't want to take time to rearrange it. E.J.
Make sure she gets a copy. Hat on here. Let's see, what do I need to do first? I need to shake hands with Dex. I know who. Welcome back to visit, Jordan. We're going to be dumping quite a bit of things on you as we move along. On the other hand, we're going to be able to relieve a lot of your pressures. In not too distant a future that I don't like really to discuss on these tapes, because the first place they go are to our enemies, of course, who just wait to read the paper and listen to the tape so that they can see what, if anything, is going on. Well, a lot is going on, more than you can imagine is going on. The world is heating up. They just killed Pol Pot, so he could not give information on the rest of his buddies. You're going to find the U.S. Justice Department, etc., sending over investigators to see what about all of this and try to find out what is known. This is in Cambodia, and it's a very, very hot spot, whether or not you realize it. And whether or not you want to face it, the entire elite programming is international. It's not something that just is happening with Billy Zipper in Washington. In fact, that may be the least important, but you're going to have to understand that in the Jewish ongoing, I guess you can call it religious cycling of rabbis, etc., and the training of young rabbis. The Plan 2000 is abundantly apparent, and this is taught at their meetings. I would like very much for Jordan to have a copy of that that I have done today. It isn't new. I expect you've already had it. We had it here a couple of years ago. But it is a Rabbi Cohen teaching his students. And it really is going to upset some of you. And Bill Clinton was the chosen one. So you're going to begin to be able to sort out the players by what they're doing to each other. A lot of manipulation to make sure the proper parties get into the official slots, but always with the capability of destroying them so they can get them out at also the right time. I would like to be able to share all of this information. All of it is welcome to anyone. We're publishing it, and they're basically leaving us alone. As far as business goes and the meeting, and Dr. Young, I would tell you that in the case with Mr. Tips, they have already acquired $12,000 in just copy and file. When the only case there is that Judge Chapin announced that Mr. Tips, our attorney, was responsible for basically malpractice in not handling this case properly. There was an argument over that. Obviously, Mr. Horn was in the courtroom, as was Judge Chapin and Jason Brandt, of all people, to watch this edict come down. Mr. Tips, of course, was livid because away went the case. The judge just simply walked in and dismissed it on the basis of all sorts of legal terminology. So Mr. Tips wanted to fight that, do a motion for reconsideration or a writ or something. So he did a reconsideration, which was filed timely through Mr. Ellie. And you go back to court, and there is Jason Brandt, Judge Chapin, and Stephen Horn, and he denies a reconsideration. He repeated that Mr. Tips was responsible for this. And in other words, Eckers or whoever could take it up with him. The case was over. There was discussion about an appeal. But there gets to be a limit after 10 years of this. And thousands of dollars later, an appeal would have gone nowhere quickly. Now, the new set of lawyers with Mr. Tips are playing unconscionable games. So I feel that all of you should know right off that you will be at contact hearing from those attorneys. They want like 4 years of back issues and up to date of all the papers. I'm talking about the newspapers. Well, it's your problem because Eckers are not on your board. They have nothing to do with your paper. You have a Las Vegas address. Do whatever you want to do, including appealing to the judge for harassment. Also, they want all of the writings that are published by the Phoenix Institute. Well, the Phoenix Institute is not the publisher. And if they want to pay the more thousands of dollars, because they don't really just want the papers, this is harassment, they want it all copied. So we'll talk about this off the record. But this is getting really old, people. And meanwhile, while they just keep playing their games, Mr. Green is playing his, that we will not discuss today, but I want to tell you, he is really, really in hot water. He's really done it to himself. I think that it's going to be difficult at best to be able to sort all of these things over the next month. There are at least a dozen days of deposition. And absolutely no cause for it. So probably the cutthroat attorney that's going to work with Mr. Ellie may very well go to work and relieve us of a little bit of that. Judge Wallace was very gracious when our people were in there, and he said, well, this time this case is mine. I have it. So I don't believe that it's very wise for them to continue this kind of behavior. Otherwise, what it means is that Miss Tootin and her attorney in Las Vegas are still outstanding. So everything is in limbo. Well, we're going to get through it. And our mission is not to play these silly games, but only to teach you what you're up against. These are the controllers of your globe. And they're working toward moving right around the globe. But they're going to have met their maker. And they're going to have met their maker right in Arab land. Just exactly like we told you it would be. And I believe that's sufficient discussion about unpleasant topics, because I know that Jordan has no unpleasant topics. So, Jordan, why don't you just come right on up here, and I'm going to let her sit back there and listen.
First of all, let me thank you for allowing me to be here in your company with you. And I have a few things I want to express from my heart. One is that I am actually here on a lark. It was not planned. I had no plans to be here, though I would love to have been here, but I had no plans to do so. And I happened by chance to decide to call and see how Brent Moorhead was doing, and come to find out Brent is in Las Vegas or wherever. And so I was the person I was talking to invited me to come to the meeting. So I thought, well, if I'm coming to a meeting, I'll bring some slides in case there's time, and maybe I'll do a slide presentation. Maybe not. And as it turns out, I am rather flabbergasted at best. I really am searching for words to say what I feel. I was not expecting to be able to speak to the audience. It was just a lark. If we had time, I would do a slide presentation if that was asked. I feel mixed emotions about sitting here right now talking to you. I have some very strong emotions and all kinds of things I would like to say, and I'd like to make it sound intelligent. I am again overwhelmed with the idea that I'm actually sitting here talking with you, because I do not consider myself to be an authority on anything, that I should be teaching you anything. I am learning every day myself, things of which are just mind-blowing and expanding to me. But I very much appreciate the honor of just being able to sit here with you and share with you my work and my interest. Again, I'm at a loss for words, and I very much appreciate your kindness in giving me the opportunity to sit and talk with you. Because for me, in my personal view of things, it's a privilege, it's an honor to be heard by your fellow men. I do not take that honor and that privilege lightly. I consider it to be a very important, and I also feel that there is some sort of a divine intervention in mankind's affairs. And I cannot escape the overwhelming feeling that I have, which I cannot explain, that I'm here by a divine direction. I wasn't supposed to be here. It just happened, and here I am sitting in front of you. I don't think these kind of things happen by chance. I think there is a rhyme and a reason to everything. And so I try with my life to go with the flow, and let's just see where it's all going to go. I just keep putting out there what I do and doing it publicly, and figure that eventually, if there is a divine direction in the universe, I will meet who I'm supposed to and be where I'm supposed to be. And so I try not to second-guess the divine. But I am totally convinced that there is a very powerful overshadowing over our earth of some very frightening and powerful minds and presence in the universe. Ancient peoples have all understood the basic concepts of what we call God, the divine in the universe. However, God is the word in English, simply comes from the German word Goth, G-O-T-T, Goth, or in the Norwegian is gut or gut. That's why you have a gut feeling. Gut means it's a divine inspiration in your gut. So you have a gut feeling. No, that's German Goth. Goth is good or God. Consequently, devil is nothing more than putting the D in front of the word evil, and God is nothing more than taking one of the zero, one of the O's out of good. So God is good and devil is evil. But the concepts which are have always been in ancient civilizations and are is divinely present today is that there is a divinely appointed force of darkness in this world. The scriptures, interestingly enough, the Apostle Paul says something in the New Testament. He talks about how we have a war against not flesh and blood, against each other, but against the principalities and, quote, those world rulers of this world darkness, or the rulers of this world darkness, end quote, implying that the darkness that this world finds itself in intellectually and spiritually is being ruled over. It's not that the human race is lost. It's that the human race has been purposely, according to a plan, well-oiled, well-financed, and a highly professional scheme to deceive the human intellect and deceive the human minds. And the primary goal of this conspiratorial apparatus is to rob individual creatures of their individual spirituality and the sovereignty of their individual spirits. That's the name of the tune on the earth today. There's a scam going on which is so horrendous, so ancient, so old, and so well put together that virtually some of the finest and intellectually astute people in the world haven't figured it out yet. Very simple. They want you. They want your life, they want your integrity, they want your spirituality, and they have set up a whole system of laws, religions, governments. Whole systems have been devised to lead you away from that which your Creator gave you, your divine spirituality and your divine sovereignty over your own life. I have the pleasure of having in my company a man who is very well versed on this, and we've talked often about it. He's helped me to understand even the nuts and bolts of how this world system works. I am not an authority on the nuts and bolts of how the system legally and lawfully works. You're far more aware of that than I. But my interest has been in the spiritual aspect of this, the divine. A word which I use, occult, simply meaning hidden, a divinely hidden spiritual truths which we have been robbed of and given in its place, given in the place of divine spirituality. We've been given religion, which coincides and meets the criteria for the religious and the political and the economic system that's been set up. And I'm tired of the entire system, all of it. I think that it is an idea whose time has come for us to now turn inward to our own spirituality and demand that which the universe brought you into the world with, your own sovereignty of your own individual spirituality and personality. I do not intend ever to give up my divine right to be who I am and be here to any government, to any religion, to any monstrosity built up by the masters of darkness. I intend to put the rest of my life into exposing this machinations that has been so well put together. It is the basis for racism, usury, manipulation, exploitation of peoples. It keeps people at odds and warring against each other. Obviously, if you're a little guy and you're in a big high school with big guys, the smart thing to do is keep all the big guys mad at each other so that they don't turn their attention on you. Consequently, the superior and the bigger and the more important people are kept at odds with each other by the small handful clique that know that if the people ever put down their arms against each other and began to talk and start thinking things out, they would begin to see they've all been misled and manipulated and exploited with propaganda. So it is my purpose, and again I have to say that I am honored to be here, and I'm finding it difficult to grab at words to tell you how I feel about just sitting here. Again, I have to tell you, I was not planning on sitting here, so I really am at a loss for words for the honor of being with you. And I was not really planning on doing a slide presentation, but I came prepared in case. I think my last comment would be this, and I feel this very strongly. If you see my resume, I have spoken quite literally all over the country to all kinds of audiences in different places. And I always, when going before an audience, no matter what size, I always expect what I'm going to get, because I know what I'm doing is going to be very controversial, and most people in the audience are not going to want to hear it, and I've already attuned myself to that, but I just don't care anymore. But in this particular case, my speaking up here, I do not know how to explain it adequately, but I feel very much at home here. I feel like this is where I should be. I feel at home because I don't feel apprehensive about an audience who's waiting to jump on me, you know? And I don't feel like I'm offending and preparing for a street fight. I really feel that the people I am in the company of are honest people who are just open-minded and want to hear. And as far as I'm concerned, as one person said it, the brain is like a parachute. It doesn't work if it's not open. Open-mindedness and the ability to look at everything, and even if it may be uncomfortable, look at everything. Because I believe that this is what the divine universe requires of people who would have their freedom, to be able to look at everything and deal with it. We are in the grips of a religious, political, economic machinations that is so ancient, goes back thousands and thousands of years, and its basis, the basis for our enslavement of the human race, not just America, not just Western Europe, but of the human race, has a very ancient and old pedigree. It's a very old trick. This thing's been coming down the tubes for thousands of years. We've been sold a bill of goods in our religion. We've been sold lies and a bill of goods in our government. We've been sold down the river. We have the best politicians and religious leaders that money can buy. And as far as I'm concerned, I have had enough, and I believe it's an idea whose time has come to be truthful and do your work as you have been given it to do by the divine. And if you've been given an opportunity to speak before large audiences, then put your life on the line and do that which is right, because I believe we are now in a war for the sovereignty of the individual on this earth. And I feel privileged and awed by the fact that I happen to even be here to be a part of it, because I realize this is a very powerful spiritual thing that's happening. And if we're involved in it, it's because we were hand-picked to be here. I also do not believe for one moment that any individual in this room is here by mere chance. He happened to be here. No. I believe in premeditated carelessness. Everybody's here. Everybody is here who's supposed to be here. And anyone who isn't, wasn't supposed to be. I am totally convinced that there is a divine force operating among us. And while we are trying to focus our attention to understand it, it has been watching us all along. So, I think at this point what I'd like to do is just, again, tell you how honored I am to even be allowed to be here with you. And I'm speechless to tell you how much I appreciate your company. And if you wish, I have about 8 to 9 hours worth of slides. I have about 3,100 new slides. The 12 carousels I brought is only half of what I have. We can go for 20 minutes or 8 hours. I don't care. So what I guess we will do is we will just go until someone physically assaults me, and then we'll call that the end.
That's why the cake.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay, good. Well, thank you very much for being here. Now, am I to assume that we will do a slide presentation at this point, or do we have other business to attend to?
Right ahead with your slide presentation.
You don't know how nice it is.
Oh, just to be able to sit down and let someone else be on the spot. I feel very honored to be in your company. I want to thank you. And okay, we'll do some slides. And thank you again. Research in the black projects, the high technology of the government behind the government has got a lot of very interesting material on that subject. The planes and the all of the high tech in the military kind of black budget stuff. So I think it would be good to have Michael do a few minutes of half hour or so, whatever, on his subject, and then when he's through, then I will do something on mine. So I want to invite all of you to pay attention to this, because I think Michael has some very interesting things to talk about. And especially to those of you who live up here, you know what I'm talking about when I say that there's a lot of very important high-tech stuff going on that we're just not made privy to. And Michael's done a lot of good work in that area, so I'll turn it over to Michael.
Yes, thank you for having me here today. My name is Mike Schratt. I'm a private pilot and aerospace researcher. And if we could have the lights turned down, please, that would be good. Yeah, I've got one. That's fine. Go ahead. Okay. I believe this nation should commit itself to sending a man to the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. With those words, President Kennedy launched us into the space race for the moon. But the question is, there's four things we really need to address here. The title of our lecture will be Black Budget Aircraft, America's Secret Air Force Revealed. We'll be considering four questions. Number one, is NASA a public relations smokescreen for the real space program? Number two, does the U.S. government, in conjunction with the military-industrial complex, use the, quote, extraterrestrial phenomenon as a cover or mask to hide its own black projects? Number three, what advanced aerospace prototypes are now being test flown at Area 51? And finally, number four, when will U.S. taxpayers and the world in general be given specific information about these deep black programs? Here we have an article from Jane's Defense Weekly, May the 2nd of 1993, Big Bucks for Black Budget. And here they indicated that in 1993, our current annual black budget was in excess of $16 billion. Now, I'm convinced that the real number here is a number much larger than that. We can go on here. Secret projects will stay black. When a project goes black, it automatically adds 15% to the cost of the project. Here's one. We have a statement here. 8 years of the Reagan administration were very good to the black world. That's from Aviation Week and Space Technology. And this is exactly what President Eisenhower told us when he stated that we should be cautious and aware of the military-industrial complex because they had no congressional oversight. And how do they keep these secrets? Well, what we're dealing with here are three levels, black programs, deep black programs, and then are what are termed USAPs, or unacknowledged special access programs. If you work in one of those programs and the president asks you for specific details, your mandatory reply is to be, Mr. President, no such project exists. Another way they keep secrets is what I've termed COI, or compartmentalization of information. We have one engineer building a wing spar, one engineer builds a landing gear door, one engineer builds an engine mount, but they never meet. And according to Aviation Week Space Technology, one gentleman stated, I've had the solution you needed for 5 years, but I didn't know the problem. So we can see what's happening here. Now, what and who is the military-industrial complex? The military-industrial complex is basically this book. This is the 1997-1998 United States Space Directory. The manual costs $99, and it basically is the entire complex wrapped up in one book. We're talking about Lockheed Martin. We're talking about Boeing. McDonnell Douglas has their own black programs, which is known as the Phantom Works. We're talking about everybody and their subcontractors. Now that everyone's being merging in, this is definitely the book to look into. We know that right down the road in Mojave, at Scaled Composites at the airport, Mr. Bert Rutan has his own ongoing black programs. He also built a 1/5 scale radar cross-section model of the B-2 that was put on the pylon. Now, that now brings us to the SR-71. This is the Mach 3 Plus reconnaissance aircraft built by the Skunk Works, headed by Mr. Kelly Johnson. It's powered by two Pratt & Whitney J-58s that produce 32,500 pounds of static thrust, uses aluminum chips in the wheels as a cooling device, and also has canted inward vertical stabilizers, thereby reducing the radar cross-section. Now, when the Air Force tells us that this is a Mach 3 Plus aircraft, what are we talking about here? What does Mach 3 Plus really mean? Well, I've got one contact in California who knows a number of retired SR-71 pilots. He was able to discern that the Blackbird regularly flew Mach 6, which would be hypersonic. And also, if you doubt me, you can check the book that has just come out called Sled Driver. In that book, it basically tells us that, definitely in the book Sled Driver, that on deacceleration to landing, the Blackbird deaccelerates to Mach 3.5. So the question is, what are they deaccelerating from? Now, you can see here the canted inwardly stabilizers here. It also incorporated a very early RAM or radar absorbent material. Aviation Week Space Technology reported SR-71 operational assignment ends. We're hearing all this talk at the beginning of the 90s. The Blackbird is being retired. We don't need it anymore. Here we have another one, Air and Space Magazine, How the Budget Killed the Blackbird. We go on here to U.S. Reconnaissance Program, SR-71 program terminated. All this talk about termination. Is there something that they have that is now flying? I'm convinced this is probably some type of a somewhat accurate representation of the new spy plane. This is the purported Aurora. It's a Mach 6 to Mach 12 hypersonic scramjet-powered reconnaissance aircraft. They can be anywhere in the world in 3 hours. It uses a modified liquid methane fuel at 130,000 feet altitude. We also know that it uses a boron-based fuel additive that allows this craft to actually have ignition at very low oxygen levels. You can see here one version, well over 130,000 feet altitude. This is a report on an XB-70 type craft that was seen being loaded into a C-5 Galaxy at the Burbank Skunk Works facility on January the 5th of 1992. And you can see they also reported in August that this craft could possibly be 200 feet in length. It also has swept canards here, upward-turned winglets, and over here on the side you can see the pattern that was picked up by Caltech of a craft going over Catalina Island, over Los Angeles, directly over Edwards Air Force Base, and going right to the Nellis facility. Here you can see the version of the XB-70, similar to what is being seen over at Edwards in 1992. Now, this is another version of the Aurora. You can see that it may, later versions may incorporate a pulse detonation wave engine produced by Science Applications International Corporation in San Diego, California. This is another version here with the canted stabilizers. Here is one which is termed the Pulsar, or the flattened donut shape or flattened football shape type configuration, using identical heating tiles directly taken off the shuttle. Again, here this would be a very low radar cross-section, but again, when you're traveling anywhere between Mach 8 and Mach 12, who needs stealth, you know? Okay, here is one from Bill Sweetman. The craft can be up to over 100 feet long, similar to the Blackbird. I'm convinced it's probably very close in length to the Blackbird. Jane's Defense Weekly reported a very good expose. What evidence do we have that this craft actually existed? Well, we have a 3D view drawing in 1989 based on an offshore oil rig sighting. One gentleman saw it here flying over. It was quite a big craft. Another type craft has dwarfed F-16 chase planes. Here we have one where mystery contact may be Aurora. Report from Jane's Defense Weekly on a new form of propulsion system. The government's been working on a new program, and the program deals with a system of propulsion that allows a Mach 3 flight without an afterburner, similar to a Super Cruise performance, and it's termed the IHPTET, or Integrated High Performance Turbine Engine Technology. And here we have the mystery contact, maybe Aurora. This is the contact that happened in 1992, where the Caltech seismological instruments were definitely triggered. They checked, double-checked, and triple-checked. It wasn't the Blackbird or the Space Shuttle at that time. Here was a McDonnell Douglas proposal for an X-30 type craft. Here is the pulsar, or the pulse detonation wave, and you can see that on this is the type of craft that has been seen flying over the Palmdale Antelope Valley Lancaster area in 1992, producing the donuts on the rope contrail. Here was one from Mark McCandlish on a nuclear tipped warhead version. Certainly the technology does exist for these craft. We know that mid to 50s, later 60s, U.S. Air Force was experimenting at Edwards with a number of lifting body configurations. Here's one with a piggyback-mounted Delta Dart-type craft here. The Pulsar would be here. Here is one disguised by NASP. Many times the U.S. government is able to mask its deep black projects with white projects. And how can we prove that? Well, Jane's Defense Weekly reported on December 12th of 1992, we have a statement from one of the heads of the ESA, or the European Space Agency. A gentleman by the name of Heinz Pfeiffer stated, quote, NASP is a cover for Aurora, period.